Designing policies is one thing. Executing them is another. Government agencies carry the responsibility of translating frameworks into action on the ground. They formulate agriculture policies aimed at boosting productivity, ensuring food security, and supporting rural economies. Execution happens through programs and subsidies. For instance, fertilizer subsidy schemes are rolled out nationwide, while extension services bring experts to these villages to train farmers in new practices. Consider the rollout of Soil Health Card program. Government scientists tested soils across millions of farms, providing personalized advice on nutrients. These programs help farmers optimize input to use, reducing cost and improving yields. Financial institutions also play a big role. Agriculture loans at concessional rates, crop insurance, and grants for irrigation projects are all facilitated through government-backed banks. These instruments give farmers not only resources but also stability. The challenge lies in ensuring that execution matches intent. Bureaucratic hurdles, limit manpower, or poor monitoring can slow down impact. But when policies are implemented effectively, as seen in the success of eNAM for digital market linkages, farmers benefit directly and the promise of agriculture policy is realized in full. The backbone of this implementation remains financial support mechanism. Financial mechanisms are the lifeblood of policy implementation. Government banks extend loans at favorable terms, ensuring farmers can invest in seeds, equipment, or even basic needs during lean seasons. Without these loans, many small farmers would remain trapped in cycles of informal debt. Insurance is another pillar. Farmers face risks from drought, flood, pest, and price fluctuations. Schemes such as PMFBY provide a safety net, making sure that one failed season does not push a family into poverty. In regions like Vidarbha, insurance has been critical in preventing farmer suicides by providing timely compensation. Grants and subsidies complement this instrument by lowering costs and encouraging adoption of new practices. For instance, subsidy support for solar pumps has allowed farmers in Rajasthan to irrigate fields sustainably, reducing dependence on erratic electricity supplies. These mechanisms do not work in isolation. When loans, insurance, and subsidies come together seamlessly, farmers gain the confidence to innovate and expand. Financial support thus becomes more than assistance. It becomes empowerment, allowing farmers to move from survival to growth. To complement this, NGOs act as catalysts by making development participatory. NGOs are often called the catalyst of rural change because they make development participatory. Instead of pushing top-down solutions, they involve farmers directly in the process of learning and adoption. In Andhra Pradesh, NGOs organized a farmer field schools where groups met weekly to learn about integrated pest management. Rather than lectures, farmers observed the results together on demonstrated plots. This participatory model built confidence and spread faster than government pamphlets ever could. NGOs also create a vital market linkages. In Madhya Pradesh, a group of small soybean farmers was struggling to self-produce at fair prices. With NGO support, they formed a producer cooperative, negotiated directly with the buyers, and earned almost 25% more per quintal. Such interventions are game changers, especially for marginalized farmers. Another role is advocacy. NGOs highlight the voice of women farmers or tribal cultivators who are often overlooked. By pushing for their inclusion in credit schemes or land reforms, NGOs bring equity to the agriculture development. In essence, NGOs ensure that development is not something done to farmers, but something done with them. The sense of ownership creates long-term adoption, sustainability, and rural empowerment. But partnerships are not always smooth. Collaboration faces many challenges. While collaboration sounds like collaboration idea, the reality is often difficult. One common challenge is poor coordination. Government agencies and NGOs may run parallel programs without sharing information. Imagine two training workshops in the same village, one by the government extension officer, the other by an NGO trainer, both teaching different fertilizer methods. Instead of clarity, farmers are left confused. Coverage is another issue. NGOs often focus on a specific region or groups, leaving other rural communities underserved. For instance, large international NGOs may concentrate on tribal belts, while dryland farmers in other areas receive little attention. Political influence can also distort collaboration. When government priorities shift with elections, NGO partnerships may be sidelined or delayed. Farmers end up as a collateral damage in the tug of war between politics and development. Despite these challenges, success stories exist. In states like Kerala, joint committees of government and NGOs plan projects together, reducing duplication. The lesson is that collaboration requires structure, platform for coordination, transparent roles, and shared accountability. Without this, efforts remain fragmented and farmers fail to get the full benefit of resources available. Overcoming these challenges opens the door to building sustainable rural livelihoods together. True transformation comes when government agencies and NGOs combine strengths. Capacity building is a prime example. In Rajasthan, joint programs have trained farmers in water-efficient farming while simultaneously building check dams. The government brought funds, the NGO mobilized the villagers, and together they created a lasting impact. Improved infrastructure is another shared outcome. Road projects funded by the Rural Development Department, when combined with NGO-led community transport services, ensured that farmers could actually reach markets on time. One pomegranate farmer shared how before the road his fruit spoiled on the way to town. Now he delivers directly to the wholesalers and earns almost double. Together, they can also promote livelihood diversification. In Odisha, NGOs trained women in mushroom cultivation, while government programs provided seed money. The result was not only additional income but also nutritional benefits for families. The bigger picture is clear. When multiple farmer players align, rural livelihoods become more resilient. Farmers are no longer dependent on a single crop or vulnerable to a single failure. They have infrastructure, skills, and income streams that ensure stability. Sustainable rural livelihoods are not built by not one actor, but by a chorus of working in harmony. And from this joint effort, some clear takeaways and next steps emerge. The collaboration between government and NGOs offers many lessons. First, integration is essential. Efforts must be pooled, not duplicated. Farmers cannot afford to attend 5 different workshops on the same subject. They need one clear, unified message. Second, expanding reach is urgent. Many regions remain underserved. Digital platforms could allow NGOs to scale training content across multiple villages at a fraction of the cost. For example, WhatsApp-based farmer groups already share weather alerts and market prices. Similar models can amplify NGO training. Third, policies must align with ground realities. A subsidy for drip irrigation means little if farmers don't know how to install or maintain the system. Feedback loops between NGOs and policymakers can close this gap. And finally, sustainability must remain central. Short-term aid or temporary infrastructure is not enough. Projects must balance economic growth and environmental health and social equity. The next step is clear. Create structured platforms where government, NGOs, and private players collaborate transparently. When that happens, policies become practice and practice becomes progress. Next, let's shift our focus to legal and regulatory framework shaping agribusinesses. Agribusiness in India does not operate in a vacuum. It is shaped by a complex legal and regulatory framework that touches land use, environment, food safety, and trade. These laws aim to balance farmer welfare, business growth, and consumer protection. For example, land reforms define who owns what and prevent land grabbing. Environmental regulations ensure that farming does not deplete soil, water, or biodiversity. Food safety laws guarantee that what reaches the consumer is healthy and traceable. Trade rules influence whether farmers can export freely or whether imports flood the market. Recent reforms such as Electronic National Agriculture Market, ENAM, are steps towards deregulation and transparency. By allowing farmers to sell beyond their local mandi, ENAM widens access and improves price discovery. However, the system is far from simple. Overlapping regulations often confuse small agribusinesses and weak enforcement undermines credibility. For example, while organic certification promises higher prices, the process is so complex that many small farmers cannot access it. Understanding this framework is critical for all stakeholders, for farmers to startups to corporates. It is the invisible scaffolding on which India's agriculture future is being built. The first area of law is to examine its land use and property rights. Land remains the most sensitive and valuable asset in Indian agriculture. Secure land tenure gives farmers confidence. A farmer in Tamil Nadu who had clear papers for his paddy field can approach a bank for credit, invest a borewell, and plan orchards for the long term. Without security, the same farmer lives in fear of eviction and avoids any investment. Land reform law also aimed to ensure fairness. Redistribution programs have helped marginal groups access farmland, breaking cycles of inequality. Yet challenges remain. Fragmented records, overlapping titles, and slow dispute resolution leave many farmers in the limbo. For agribusinesses, clear property rights are crucial. Imagine a company setting up a food processing plant. If local farmer land rights are disputed, the entire supply chain becomes unstable. Secure rights are therefore not only a farmer's issue, but also a business necessity. The road ahead requires digitizing land records, strengthening local and land tribunals, and ensuring transparency in transactions. Only then can land truly become a foundation for both farmer prosperity and agribusiness growth. But land rights alone aren't enough. Agriculture must also meet environmental regulations. Farming is not just an economic activity, it is deeply tied to our environment. That is why India has a range of environmental regulations to ensure agriculture remains sustainable. Pollution control laws, for example, restrict the overuse of pesticides and chemicals that contaminate water bodies. In Punjab, unchecked use of urea once led to groundwater contamination. Laws and awareness programs have since encouraged farmers to adopt balanced fertilization. Climate change policies also matter. Schemes promoting organic farming or integrated nutrient management are designed to reduce carbon footprints. I recall visiting Sikkim, India's first fully organic state, where farmers proudly showed how reduced chemical usage improved not just soil health but also the market price of their produce. Yet enforcement remains a challenge. Many small farmers are unaware that dysregulations and weak monitoring often results in continued overuse of harmful inputs. This creates a paradox. Laws exist, but the ground reality lags. For agribusiness, compliance is not optional. Exporters, for instance, must meet strict EU residue standards. A consignment of grapes rejected abroad due to pesticide level not only affects the farmer but also India's reputation in the global markets. Environmental regulation, therefore, is both a responsibility and a gateway to global opportunity. From the environment, we now move to food safety and quality standards. Food safety is at the heart of consumer trust. India's regulatory framework requires agribusiness to comply with standards on production, packaging, and distribution. Domestic rules under the Food Safety Standards Authority of India, FSSAI, ensure that what reaches the consumer is safe, nutritious, and traceable. Take milk adulteration as an example. Stricter FSSAI regulations and testing have reduced harmful practices and built consumer confidence in packaged dairy products. Similarly, grading standards for fruits and vegetables now help consumers distinguish between premium and regular produce. Global markets raise the bar even higher. Exporters must comply with international certifications like Global GAP. In Maharashtra, grape farmers who adopted these standards were able to access European supermarkets, earning 30 to 40% more than selling locally. The story shows how compliance can unlock premium markets. The challenge, however, is scale. Small farmers often struggle with the cost and complexity of certification. While large agribusiness can invest in traceability systems, smallholders need support through cooperatives or digital platforms. Ultimately, food safety regulations are not just about avoiding penalties. They are about building trust and consumers at home and abroad. And in agribusiness, trust is currency. The stronger it is, the greater the opportunity. Food safety links directly with trade and market access rules. Trade policies shape what farmers grow and how they sell. One of the most significant reforms in recent years has been the push for market deregulation. By allowing farmers to sell outside traditional mandis, policies are expanding options for direct sales. For example, farmers in Madhya Pradesh using the e-Naam platform now connect directly with buyers nationwide, often securing higher prices than local e-mandis. The e-Naam initiative itself is transformative. It digitizes agriculture markets, making pricing transparent and reducing exploitation by middlemen. A vegetable farmer in Uttar Pradesh once told me that for the first time he could compare mandi rates in multiple states. That sense of choice gave him confidence he never had earlier. Trade policy also governs imports and exports. Export bans on onions or wheat may protect domestic consumers, but they hurt farmers who depend on global markets. Conversely, promoting exports with subsidies can open international opportunities, and the challenge is to strike balance. Protecting consumers while rewarding farmers requires nimble, adaptive trade policies. Done right, they integrate Indian farmers into the global economy, turning them from local suppliers into world-class competitors. Yet navigating these trades and compliance requirements is not easy. India's regulatory landscape is vast and often complicated. For small and medium agribusinesses, navigating multiple rules can feel overwhelming. Imagine a food processing startup. It must comply with land use laws, pollution control and food safety, labor rules and export certification, each with its own paperwork and fees. Compliance costs are another barrier. Installing pollution control equipment or maintaining cold chain traceability is expensive, especially when profit margins are thin. A small fruit exporter may find it unviable to meet European standards, even though the market is lucrative. Weak enforcement adds to the problem. In some cases, regulations exist but are not applied uniformly. Larger players may find ways to bypass rules while smaller players bear the full weight of compliance. This creates an uneven playing field. Corruption can further undermine trust. Farmers or businesses may feel that getting approvals depend more on connections than on merit. The outcome is a paradox. regulations intended to create fairness sometimes end up discouraging small players. To truly work, compliance systems must become simpler, digital, and transparent. Only then will agribusiness of all sizes compete fairly and grow sustainably. This is where the government and NGO support becomes vital again. Support for agribusiness does not stop at regulation. It extends into active landholding. Government agencies provide financial aid, capacity building, and technology extension. For example, subsidies for polyhouses or cold storage units encourage entrepreneurs to invest in advanced farming infrastructure. At the same time, NGOs fill critical gaps. They work directly with farmers to promote sustainable practices. In Madhya Pradesh, an NGO helped women's farmers adopt vermicomposting, turning farm waste into fertilizer. With government support for marketing, these women now sell compost commercially, earning a steady side income. Financial support programs remain central. Low interest rates and insurance schemes help agribusiness weather risks and scale. When combined with NGO-led training, these financial tools are used more effectively. The best outcomes emerge when both government and NGOs work together. Consider a dairy cluster in Gujarat. The government provided chilling units while an NGO trained farmer on hygiene and cooperative management. The result was milk that met both domestic safety standards and export quality requirements. This kind of blended support provides that agribusiness development is not about isolated policies but about ecosystems, where finance, training, and regulation converge to empower farmers and entrepreneurs alike. To make such support effective, collaboration and monitoring are imperative. Policies succeed only when they are implemented well and adapted to reality. That requires evidence-based formulation, strong collaboration, and continuous monitoring. For instance, when crop insurance was first launched, many farmers struggled with claim processing. By collaborating with private insurance, NGOs, and technology companies, the government has gradually improved turnaround times. This is a model of how multi-stakeholder engagement strengthens implementation. Stakeholder engagement is not optional, it is essential. Farmers must be a part of a policy design and not just recipients. When their feedback is integrated, adoption improves. An example comes from ENAM. Initial rollout faced low participation. But after farmer groups highlighted issues with digital literacy, training programs were introduced. Participation surged. Monitoring and evaluation are equally vital. Policies cannot be static. They must evolve with data. Regular assessment helps identify gaps and redesign interventions before they fail. The imperative is clear. Policy cannot remain confined to offices in Delhi. It must live and breathe in the fields of Maharashtra, the plantations of Kerala, and the mandis of Uttar Pradesh. Collaboration across government, NGOs, and private players is what will bring that vision to life. All these threads come together in the concluding outlook for Indian agribusiness. As we conclude, it is clear that India's agribusiness future rests on strong legal clarity, effective enforcement, and multi-stakeholder collaboration. Land reforms must move beyond promises to digitize transparent records to give farmers confidence. Without secure property rights, neither banks nor businesses can invest fully in rural areas. Enforcement is another priority. Regulations on pollution control or food safety are only good as their implementation. Strengthening institutions with technology, from satellite monitoring of crop insurance to blockchain-based traceability, can make compliance both easier and more credible. Collaboration is the third pillar. Agribusiness is too large for any one player to handle alone. Governments, NGOs, private entrepreneurs, and farmers must coordinate to redesign policies that reflect ground realities. When Revasa Farms first began the integrated fresh produce supply chains, we quickly realized that success required not just technology and logistics, but also alignment with mandi reforms and food safety regulations. Policies and business models had to work hand in hand. The outlook is promising. India has the land, the talent, and the entrepreneurial energy. With the right frameworks, we can transform farming into a globally competitive, environmentally sustainable, and a socially inclusive engine of growth. Thank you. This is Vaibhav Samant, and let's meet into the next chapter.